from Lackawanna, New York. That's Dr. Lonnie Liston. No, just Dr. Lonnie Smith. See, I was going to warn you not to confuse the two. They're two different Lonnies. This is Dr. Lonnie Smith on his Hammond B3 with Play It Back. It's from his 2016 album, Evolution. He's now 73 and still going, and has performed in a wide variety of genres, gospel, classical, jazz, and R&B, but is well known for his preference for venues that bring him close to his music fans. He was named the Organ Keyboardist of the Year in 2003, 2004, 2005, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2013, and 2014 by the Jazz Journalist Association. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. What are we going to talk about today? Let's talk. Well, President Obama yesterday began a historic 3-day visit to Cuba, the first by a U.S. president in 88 years, and the result of Obama's own diplomatic effort, which he began in December of 2014, to normalize relations with Cuba since U.S.-imposed isolationist hostilities in 1959. Also yesterday, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, considered the most powerful and influential lobbying group for Israel in the United States, began its 3-day 2016 policy conference at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. All of the presidential candidates, with the exception of Bernie Sanders, are slated to address the group. Both events are fraught with implications for U.S. foreign policy, as it turns out, and are receiving intense media attention, particularly because they carry so much weight. But the media seems to think, it's from the tone of coverage and the frequency of coverage that I've noticed so far, they're actually almost equating the two events. Although the tone of the coverage, I would say, differs markedly. And that's what we're going to discuss today. The media and their messages as it relates to Cuba and Israel. It is interesting when you look at the coverage, and I started looking at this since yesterday, we see the establishment media, if you will, looking at these two things as world events, positioning these two issues, not issues, but events, as if they have parity. And we are clear that this is a little odd, wouldn't you say? And then it isn't, if you understand the role of media in the United States, the shaping of public opinion. This is a presidential season. Presidential race is in full gear. And we have, on the one hand, a president who soon will be leaving office, supposedly wrapping up an initiative that everybody, whether you like Obama or you don't like Obama, the point is, this is a very historic moment. And the President of the United States, the current President of the United States, although people are already regarding him in Congress, and even the presidential candidates, many of them regarding him as the former president, is beginning to put his seal on an effort he began 2 years ago in earnest and bringing to fruition what by any definition would be considered a historic achievement. Of course, we have some attitudes about that. And the media organizations intend that we should not let them go. They are shaping our views. They are telling us, if you watch the coverage, and we're going to get into that with your calls at 888-874-4888, what is the tone of coverage there? What is it saying to you? Is it discussing this historic event in a way that actually allows the public to appreciate the historicity of it? Is it just because, well, so much time has passed and, we're trying to do good, but dot, dot, dot. And it's up to us to fill in the dots, but we are supplied the information we ought to have to determine what this supposedly means. And on the other hand, and you have to understand how really extraordinary this is, and it speaks to many aspects of the role of media in a society. An organization, any typical organization having its convention, having its policy convention, no big deal. But this isn't any organization, is it? We've discussed APAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, posing as a group interested in promoting the interests of Israel. We know it to be something different. But their policy convention is on par with a global event, a major international initiative, and just as important, as a matter of fact. In fact, I would say it's so important that we have not seen all of the presidential candidates really in the same place at the same time, talking about one thing as determined by an interest group. Fascinating. So I have to ask you, if you have been noting this particular shift in the way the media are covering the presidential visit to Cuba and an organization having essentially a policy meeting at which the presidential candidates, with the exception of Bernie Sanders, who, by the way, and it ought to be noted, in fact, I'll have you tell me what is significant about Bernie Sanders's absence from this policy convention by APAC in Washington, D.C. There's something remarkably noteworthy about it. But what I want to talk about, as you call in and as you offer your observations as to why these two events occurring pretty much in the same time frame are being treated very interestingly by the media. Why are we appreciating both things? What could possibly be the reason for that? I want to talk about media, what the media assigns itself to do. The media, I mean, I think incorrectly is viewed as some kind of the bastion of liberalism, and it isn't. And in this particular political season, we're seeing the media take on a particularly vicious and very, very frightening role in terms of its insistence, not on reporting the news, but in some cases making the news, in other cases making up the news, but inserting itself as the interpreter of reality. They present to us a reality that we ought to adopt as our own. They make up our minds for us. What could possibly be the interest? What could possibly be the reason that the media seem to be doing this more and more often and with impunity. The way they've covered the presidential race, for example, so far, you'd have the media sometimes even acting like consultants to the candidates. This is what do you think Hillary Clinton ought to do to win so-and-so-and-so? That's not your role, is it? She has enough money, and all of the candidates do, to go hire their own people to do whatever it is they want to do. But the media consultants and experts have taken on the role, and you have to watch it because it is working hand in glove with the tone of the election season, but also at the moment we're in. Remember, I told you this election is very historic, very, very significant, not because it's a presidential election, but because there is a realignment occurring. And in this period, all of the institutions of our society are responding appropriately. That is, they are responding as per the dictates of our apartheid society, our society that acts quite irrationally many, many times. And that's the whole isolation of Cuba is an expression of irrational behavior, I would say, by the United States, principally. The media for all these years has conditioned the American public to have a particular disposition toward Cuba. Even people who know nothing about Cuba know something about Cuba, and they know it's bad. And that is fine, because that is the intention. When the society, the people who create our reality through governance, through policy, through the exercise of their authority and power and influence, and this brings us to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, the people who have the authority and power to influence opinion and thereby influence action and decision making, they are clear that we are in a very, very, a very, very critical moment. It's a very major turning point in our society, and that includes attitudes. That includes the numerical and demographic shift that is occurring. It includes the realization by the power elite that they must reorganize the system. The system is being readjusted in all these ways, and foreign policy is an extension of that. But I was marveling at the fact that looking, and I've had quite a few years in this field, and I'm alarmed, really, by the unabashed participation by the media in what I could only describe as a sustained propaganda war, reflecting the attitudes and the policies of the power elite and intent on creating a sameness in our thinking so as to create a sameness in our actions and our decision making. And this is becoming more and more clear as we see and we look at the tone of the presidential race. You look at what is emerging as, quote, issues, unquote. You look at the attitudes, the personal attitudes, not the ideological attitudes, but the personal attitudes of the individuals involved. Where are they going? What do they want? And we discussed before, last week, what they're looking to do is simply assure the continuity of the system as it originally was designed, to maintain a power elite. Every now and then they tweak and tweak and tweak, but essentially the power equation is to remain exactly the same. We have a new breed coming along. These are not the people originally perceived as the people who would rule, but as things happen, they are the new generation of people who are perceived as being entitled to rule because they have taken that themselves. And the old power elite pretty much has been numerically outmaneuvered. They died. But the system was perfected. The system was designed and perfected to be self-maintaining. And we see the anomaly of even the African-American president first indicating loyalty to the system and then to the party and its ideology, which is the same thing. In order to assure the system that he wasn't going to veer too far. Now, interestingly, in this trip to Cuba, the president took a contingent, not a cultural contingent. He didn't take people who are emblematic of the American people. He took people who are going to Cuba strictly for business. That's who went with him. He was the ambassador for the capitalist class. This diplomatic initiative is about, hey, Mr. President, before you leave office, you use your power, your executive power, whatever power you have, seal this deal real fast. Let's get into Cuba and let's start making money. One of the headlines today in Fortune magazine, for example, talks about Obama says Google has a deal to expand internet access in Cuba. Well, now, I thought that this was about, you know, America coming to its senses and doing the right thing politically, having plotted and planned and having sunk billions and billions of dollars trying to overthrow the Cuban government and assassinate its leaders and all of that stuff. I mean, you get into that kind of rapprochement. That these times have come to an end and we see the error of our ways and we intend to be good neighbors, considering Cuba is just 90 miles off our coast. But no, it's about Google. It's about Marriott hotels. It's about the corporate America that Obama first has pledged his allegiance to. And that was the motivation. And that is the group that is traveling with him. And he's personally introducing to the Cuban government. Interesting, isn't it? So, on the other hand, when we look at the APAC policy convention, as what they're calling it, they only want to know one thing. What is your position with regard to Israel? That's all they want to know. And everybody is just breaking down the doors to get in, to address them and assure them that no need to worry, we understand your concerns, and we're with you. Hillary Clinton made a very rousing speech earlier today, and in that speech, she basically, made no doubts at all about her allegiance to Israel, even as she's talking about oppressive governments and racial discrimination in the United States. Hey, there is a problem in Israel too. she didn't recognize any, none of them will recognize the downsides to anything, except that they're there to say they will pledge the customary billions of dollars in taxpayer money to support a tyrannical and hostile government and its oppressive regime toward the Palestinians. And as you will note, in as you go through the, you know, the coverage, as you expose yourself to the coverage, you will see absolutely no mention that there are people protesting. There are people protesting this thing. On the other hand, when it came to Cuba, they all reported protests of President Obama's visit. See? Very interesting. But we will talk about this today to just kind of compare and contrast and what it is the media has said, have set themselves up as, in a way that should really cause us to pay attention to what is the intention of their coverage. How are they covering both events? Why are they equating the two? Why is it happening at the same time? All of these things are very, very interesting. And there is a method and a madness to it as well. 888-874-4888. Let's start in New York. Patricia, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
I cannot comment on the major news outlets because, as you know, I don't listen to them. Most of my viewing is done on business outlets because, as you know, if you want to know what foreign policy is, you got to follow the money. So I watched MSNBC this morning, and the first thing that was of interest to me when Obama was on the receiving line, the band was playing, and as the cameras walked down the line of the band, all of the band members looked like you and me. And I don't know if people saw that because, you know, the racial composition of Cubans, for people to make the connection between the Cubans in Miami and the Cubans who were left behind and why they were left behind, it's glaring and it's starking. But also, as you mentioned, you talk about all the business interests that accompanied Obama on this trip. And, of course, there was, I saw Ursula Banks, who is the chairperson, the CEO of Xerox. There was Arne Sorenson from Marriott. They are chair and chairperson of the Business Interests Committee. And the commentator was asking Ursula Banks about the fact that the difficulties the business community would have was because of socialism and the fact that employees are not employees of the company, but they're employees of the government. The employee-employer relationship is completely different from what most American companies are accustomed to. And it was interesting, as the reporter was trying to imply that there was some problem with this socialist country, Banks said, look, we have relationships with all types of countries and all types of governments, so that's not really the problem for us. And I thought that was a very interesting statement. In other words, money can transcend anything when you want it to. You could also make it an issue when you want it to. The other thing with Hillary Clinton, you know, I also read with interest about the fact that Hillary went to AIPAC to absolutely make certain that they understand that the relationship with Israel is not negotiable and that she's not going to be neutral. She was trying to counter Donald Trump, who had stated that his relationship, he was going to be sort of a neutral guy when it came to Israel. And, you know, African Americans, you have to be somewhat, oppression, you know, requires you to be out of your ever-loving mind. And if African Americans cannot see the relationship between their condition in this country and the condition of Palestinians, and that everything that Hillary is saying is completely contradictory, then truly we're out of our minds.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the media itself? I mean, what is the role of this institution? How is it striking you?
Yeah, well, it's for me, the answer is very simple. Alton Maddox always says the first principle of war is that you destroy the communication and you restore it. You control communication, so you control the message that is then filtered to the people. And that's the role of media. The role of media is to control the message. You get one message, it's a control message, and you feed it to the people over and over and over until it sticks. And that's really the role of media.
Did you see, or did it occur to you that you saw no report so far, no extensive report by major media? Some non-mainstream media, of course, have reported that you see no accounting at all, no report about the opposition to protests at AIPAC.
Absolutely. Very clear. And from yesterday, they talked about the protesters, the 50 protesters who were arrested prior to Obama's arrival on the island. Yes. Again, stark contradiction.
Thanks, Patricia, for your call. And
thank you.
A keen eye on the media you certainly have. 888-874-4888. This is really important to pay attention to, because you see how everything is working hand in glove to produce a predictable result. We are supposed that this, at the end of these 3 days, we will have a particular impression, both of President Obama's visit to Cuba. So far, it's reported as just a visit. And we would have, however, a very serious interpretation of what is going on at the AIPAC policy conference, which ought to be closed business, right? It shouldn't bother us what a lobbying group chooses to discuss among themselves, right? But yet, we have, I turned on the television today, there was live streaming of this event. This means that this is extremely important. It is extremely important. CNN had live streaming of the event, many MSNBC live streaming of this event. And we have some idea that it's so important, this group is so important, that it is getting almost equal attention as the president's visit to Cuba. And we are getting the speeches of the various candidates who are addressing AIPAC, a lobby group. What does that say? What does that say to you? And I want to ask you, what do you think of the fact that Bernie Sanders is not addressing this group? What could the reason possibly be, in your view? Very interesting. We'll take this call. We'll take this break and come back to your calls right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're talking about the media and its various messages, which turned out to be kind of scaringly the same today as the president begins his three-day visit. He began it yesterday. On Sunday, he landed yesterday, and he's on a three-day visit to Cuba. And also beginning yesterday was the lobby group, AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, having its policy convention in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing why is it today that these two events, which would be, in my view, completely different, why are they being equated in the media? Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you, Latrice?
Fine, thank you, Khalil. How are you?
I'm great. It's sunny here. Weather's changing. Hopefully times will be changing also. I'm glad that you are putting some spotlight on this issue, and Patricia was, in my opinion, very spot on in her comments previously. I just think, once again, a lot of Americans don't maybe understand the history between Cuba and the United States and the Batista regime and what this is about with Cuba. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you could look at this because, you know, on the one hand, it's better to trade with people. When you trade with other nations, it's less likely you're going to have conflict because you're intertwined, you know, monetarily. But it's interesting. When you said Google, something popped into my head. Because I remember not long ago, there was a documentary about how the Cubans received their information. So they love soap operas, and apparently there's a big black market for flash sticks. You come out of Miami, and people record, you know, shows on a flash stick, and they're sold on the black market because their internet is non-existent, basically. They have internet cafes, but it costs a lot of money, you know, to go in and view shows. But that is, Patricia was so right, I think, that the information, they have, you know, they've been on information shutdown in Cuba for so long that when they open up the information now, right, with Google and the rest of these lawmakers, I heard it was 36 lawmakers that accompanied Obama, President Obama. So it will be interesting to find out who has been donating to these lawmakers and, you know, follow the money. Because that's amazing. When you open up the internet, to the regular Cuban. And then, you know, there's somebody, what, didn't they put someone in jail? Actually, it was a Jewish guy. He was laying fiber optic cable in Cuba without permission. This was 2 years ago, I believe. Because, see, that's the next thing. If they have internet, there needs to be some infrastructure. You know, are you aware of what I'm talking about?
Yes, I can't recall the name of the gentleman.
Okay, right.
But
okay.
He was Jewish. And he supposedly went to Cuba to assist Jewish organizations in setting up internet programs for them there, although he was specifically charged with doing covert activities, trying to essentially be a front for the undermining of the government. That's what he was charged with. The thing is that we have a super simplistic analysis of the world. And when a country, a small country, and by the way, this is very, very important, and it goes back to what Patricia said, if we don't understand the links, the Cuban Revolution actually was started by Africans in Cuba. They were the ones who did it. They started it and paid a heavy price.
The sugarcane farm, right. They were the first hurt.
Those were the ones who started the revolution long before Fidel Castro was even born.
Right.
And Fidel Castro came in on the tail end of it, but it was the Africans in Cuba who revolted on the sugarcane plantations and revolted against the plantocracy in Cuba. So when people talk about, well, the Cuban people, and you know, they're living under a terrible dictatorship and so forth, we have to appreciate the context of life in Cuba. Life in Cuba was, I mean, Cuba was known as the whorehouse of the Caribbean. It was
exactly.
Where soldiers and the Navy and everybody basically were directed to relieve their sexual tensions. Cuba was the mafia centerpiece. You see that in the movie of the Godfather, how they divvied up Cuba. Cuba's previous administrations, which were U.S. supported, absolute corruption, total corruption in Cuba, and misery for the people who, by the way, are predominantly of African descent. Fidel Castro himself was proud to say, I'm proud of African blood in my veins, the same that Hugo Chavez said. So we have to keep that in mind.
That's going to my point. It seems like the subject of race touches, I hate to use that word race, but that's what most people understand. Race and ethnicity touches everything, because average American does not really, unless you spend time in Miami or know some Trinis or Caribbeans, you don't really understand the history between the Caribbean and the United States and the subjugation of mostly sugarcane workers, but, you know, plantation workers in the South, the southern part of the hemisphere. Look at Haiti. There's a reason that Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. That's by design. But this could be a good thing, maybe, if this works out the right way. Because the internet, like many other things, has a good side and a bad side. So if folks are able to access more information to become more literate, because like you say, the Afro-Caribbean community in Cuba is huge, you know, but we see a whitewashed version, because the Cubans in Miami are mostly the ancestors of the Spanish. You know, they're like, they look like Anglos.
They're the sons and daughters of the plantocracy for the most part. And it's interesting, if you were to go to Miami and you say, well, it's Cuban. No, there is a distinct separation. It's apartheid, absolute apartheid among the Cuban community, whether in Miami or in New Jersey. The black Cubans live in the same way as the white Cubans, as they did back home. Two different lives entirely.
Exactly. Like in Newark, there's a Cuban community very near Penn Station in Newark.
Yes.
You know, very nice food. I've been there many times. And you don't see that many dark-skinned shop owners there. But they
you're talking about close to the Ironbound district there. Yes.
Of course.
So we see, what do you think accounts for the fact that these two events are being treated almost with equal seriousness? A lobby group has a meeting, and it is treated as a major international event by the media, and the President of the United States is concluding a major diplomatic initiative, and both are treated with the same kind of gravitas, as they say. What do you think accounts for that?
I'm going to use a very base term, and this is what is called on the street the flimflam. Okay? They want to focus attention toward Cuba because there's already maybe some animosity between a lot of older white Americans and Cuba because of our history or lack of history knowledge. And Israel, because people need to really understand, Israel is an apartheid-run society. And I am not I'm not going to say anti-Semitic because that means you don't like Muslims either. I am not anti-Israeli. I am anti the way Israel is run. It's the government. It's the power. It's their power elite. I think more and more young black people are understanding that we are more aligned with the Palestinians. But my point is that when this veneer, when these disgusting onion skins of Israel begin to peel back, It's going to be very painful when the truth comes out of how Israel is basically another arm of our military-industrial complex, in that American arms manufacturers are able to send weapons to Israel via foreign aid, and a lot of these weapons are test-run on Palestinians. That's the only place in the world they can do that.
What to you is the significance of Bernie Sanders not addressing AIPAC?
He doesn't want to touch a hot stove. But I think by default, I think he's making a statement by default. And that's a very shrewd way of a shrewd way of maybe addressing this issue, because he is Jewish, and he's not what you call a good Jew, right? You know, what Jews call themselves, good Jews and bad Jews. He's not a good Jew. He doesn't, but whatever, that's his personal thing. But, the Israel thing is so large, we really have to address this issue. We have to get to the point where we can have an honest discussion without being labeled.
Does he get points for it or not?
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
Does Bernie Sanders get points for not addressing AIPAC?
Absolutely.
He does.
Absolutely.
Why?
I think because AIPAC really shouldn't be in existence in the first place. You know, it's time for the truth to be told about Israel. Why are we using taxpayers' dollars to fund a genocide on the other side of the world? This is just unacceptable. We did it with South Africa. I mean, people, look at the history. Look at what Stephen Biko went through. Look at the parallels between South Africa and Israel are very clear to me. But maybe that's just me. I don't know. And I don't know. You asked some very good questions. But yeah, I give Bernie points. But I don't know. What is your opinion on that?
Well, I just think it's significant. As you correctly said, he is the only Jewish candidate. And I would like him to be very public about why he did not address AIPAC. AIPAC is loathed among the progressive community for its role. It is not just an interest group. We've discussed AIPAC and the role AIPAC has played in shaping U.S. policy, and that means shaping U.S. policy against Palestine and Palestinians. And we have here a very, very stark statement being made by Bernie Sanders. It's not being reported. Interesting. Thank you for your call.
It's almost unheard of. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
If we go to Chicago, Henry, what are you thinking about the role of media today, treating a domestic issue and a historic event as if they were the same thing?
Hey, you two, how's it going?
Okay. How about you?
Well, you got a topic here that's firing the neurons in my brain right now, so I'm going to try to... explain it as best as I could from what I've seen. In regards to the Cuban visit, I was looking at the coverage of it, and it just seems like the way the media is portraying it is that this is something that the Cubans need. And, you know, reading about the history of Cuba, and also actually talking to my dad about it, because he had known some military men that have gone to Cuba during his time in the Air Force before the revolution. And, you know, he talked about the discrimination amongst dark-skinned people in that particular area. And so, I always think about that. But, you know, the media will never talk about the history of it. I mean, they don't even talk about the immediate history of it. You know, they just talk about how good this is for the Cuban people and how good this is for, you know, the American people. But then again, you start seeing protests. So it's like, okay, is this really good for the Cuban people or what? So, you know, just like with the other people who call, you know, it seems like, and I think you expressed this too, it just seems like more of a business move than anything. It seems like it's going to benefit more American companies than the Cuban people itself. Also, too, in parallel to the Cuban Cuban visit, and I want to put a sports spin on this too, because Major League Baseball is also in Cuba. I guess as a goodwill tour to the Cuban nation, but. You know, they're playing off the sympathies of a lot of the Cuban ball players who, you know, quote unquote, defect, you know, to America to, you know, to join the major leagues. And it just seems kind of odd that they're playing like all the stories of all the ball players who came over and couldn't see their families and couldn't see, you know, their friends in Cuba, and they had to leave behind Cuba because Cuba was so oppressive, and, you know, they had to, you know, they had to do this. And it was just odd the way ESPN was playing that story, you know, that storyline now, you know, considering that, you know, Cubans have been coming over to play Major League Baseball for, you know, for decades. So it just seems to me really odd that they're playing it like that the Cubans need this, that they need Americans to come in and help, you know, help their society out. And, you know, we as people of history know that it's a different set of circumstances behind the scenes. And I'm not buying that line of them, you know, needing us more than we need them. And in regards to Israel, and the conference, you know, in reality, Israel is a sovereign state, that is in what they call the Middle East. But in theory, to me, Israel is basically the biggest military base in the Middle East, because that's all Israel is there for, is to maintain an American military presence within the Middle East because of the instability there. They're basically, to me, the eyes and the ears of America, of American policy as well. So they're there, you know, that's why we pump so much money into Israel. I mean, it isn't because, you know, Israel is some poor country that needs our aid. No, they're sending weapons over there. They're buying, you know, Israel is buying weapons so they can maintain military, you know, some sort of military presence, you know, for Americans.
But from the point of view of media coverage, why do you think that there is this? Well, I should ask you first, do you think that there is an equating of the two in the coverage today? The visit by President Obama is having, at least in terms of coverage, pretty much they're putting it on the same level. And in fact, it is drawing the same kind of attention today.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that troubles you about that?
Yeah, it does, because, you know, whenever the media talks about foreign policy, and they try to, how should I put it? When it comes to foreign policy, it's never what they actually tell you or they convey to you. You know, like I was saying with Cuba, you know, the way they portrayed the Cuba visit was, you know, this is something that the Cuban people need, and that this is some humanitarian effort that we're giving to the Cuban government. And I think with the Israeli conference, that's also something that, you know, we need to do. You know, we need to support Israel as Israel supports us. And, you know, like the previous caller said, I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm just anti-Israeli government. I don't like what they're doing over there, you know, killing Palestinians and other people that you know, that they tend to label as, you know, anti-Semitic or whatever. But the media troubles me because the media portrays this as something that we need.
Well, I'm going to go back to Khalil for a minute and address the word anti-Semitic. The word anti-Semitic is itself anti-Semitic.
Yes, I know.
Semites are Amharic, Ethiopic, and Arabic-speaking peoples. So it's not just Eastern European Jews. Semite is. So it includes a broad range of people, but the term has been arrogated to mean Eastern European Jews mostly. But let me ask you, what you talked about this phrase, and I wrote it down. It's as if they need us. This is the tone of coverage saying you know, the president is going to Cuba because Cuba needs the United States at this time. In what ways do you see that being expressed in coverage?
Well, when they talk about when they look at this historic event, and I guess there are, this is why I don't trust the media, because I guess they were showing pictures, and you know the best way to convey a real message is showing pictures and video. All right, so when I was watching the news this morning, there were pictures, I guess they had in Cuba, of President Obama and President Raul Castro together. And it was some sort of hailed historic, you know, I mean, it's a hailed historic event, but it was almost like the Cuban people were very welcoming to Obama, you know, because they had pictures of him and Raul Castro together. And it was sort of like, I mean, that was the perception that they portrayed. Now, I don't know if that's real or not, you know, because they say it was from Cuba. And, you know, they say that it was.
Yes, you did see pictures of President Castro and President Obama together. However, this is very important. He was not on the tarmac to greet the president right off the bat.
Exactly. You know, yes,
this was very, very important. But you touched on a very important note here, and that is the tone of coverage. When you say it looks as if they need us, that is very, very much a conscious decision on the part of media in how they contribute to this notion of U.S. imperialism, that we are superior. This is not a meeting of equals, you see, and that is portrayed in the coverage, and you absolutely nailed that. The idea being that the United States, the big, mighty United States, is basically allowing itself to have some kind of contact with Cuba, but with the understanding that it is the more powerful nation. And this is one of the reasons, you know, how diplomacy is very interesting. Raul Castro just did not meet the president at the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And that, people said that was a sign of disrespect. No, it was about we're equals. And these things are not covered the way they ought to be, I think. And here we have a historic moment. But it troubles me that an organization that has its own business, is doing its own thing, it has its own membership, and people are coming to attend a convention, and suddenly we, as a nation, ought to know what's going on there. In terms of the allocation of time, I don't think that a convention of the NAACP, a convention of Lithuanians of the United States would get the same coverage. But it is very, very important to pay attention to the fact that these exceptions are made by the media for a specific reason. Gerald Horn, thanks a lot, Henry. Thanks for talking with us today. Gerald Horn will, of course, walk us through the implications of this visit, probably within another couple of days. But I thought we would open up this discussion just to keep you posted on what it is you ought to be looking for when you are looking at the news or reading accounts. The intention is to shape our thinking, shape our reality, give us the thing already chewed up and digested, and all you have to do is swallow. That's all we have to do. Just take it as they present it. But there is a very, very important reason, all the more so because Gerald Horn, as you know, wrote the book about the Cuban Revolution and African Americans and the Haitian Revolution, all tied up in one. And he has an extraordinary facility with global developments and foreign policy. So we will be hearing from him, and he will be analyzing for us after the these events have concluded so that we will know the full weight of what has happened here in both instances. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I really do appreciate the fact that you tune in, and all the more so that you continue to promote the program and you promote PRN.FM. I thank you for that. It is a great consolation to me that people put a lot of their trust in our coverage all through the day, and I urge you to pass the word around and let people know. Thanks so much for that. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow. You want to stay tuned for that. And you can write me at leadstories@gmail.com. I would be delighted to hear from you. I'm trying to catch up with the volume of correspondence, but I'm getting there. And thank you so much for your thoughts and your prayers as I tackle this little bump in the road. See you tomorrow. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.